And that's the kicking music. That means it's time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. And I'm here around the table for the first time in a couple weeks with the reassembled Pop Culture Happy Hour crew. How is everybody?
Great.
Fantastic. Oh,
never been better.
How are you feeling, Stephen?
Well, I feel like I'm kind of being punched slowly in the sinuses.
Oh, excellent. Punched with what?
Bags of wet sand.
That is excellent. Stephen, as you may remember, along with our esteemed producer, Mike Katziff, is just getting back from South by Southwest in Austin, where I'm just going to guess right now they mostly slept and drank lemongrass smoothies.
Mm-hmm. Did yoga.
Went to bed by 8.
Did yoga, went to bed by 8.
And watched the sunrise.
And yet Stephen seems to have come back with the mother of all chest colds. So if you notice that he's a little bit, you know.
Chesty.
If you notice that he's a little bit chesty, then that might be the reason. Anyway, speaking of Stephen, who in the heck are you, Stephen, and what do you do at NPR?
Well, I am Stephen Thompson. I am an editor at NPR Music.
And next to you, Trey Graham, what do you do at NPR?
I'm Trey Graham. I'm the movies editor at NPR.org, and I work a little bit with you on the blog.
And Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comics for the NPR website.
And we also do, as mentioned, have back with us our esteemed producer, Mike Katziff, who is always in the room and who we appreciate.
Well, you know, it also, it should be noted that at South by Southwest, not only did I get to hang out with our esteemed producer, Mike Katziff, but Mike and I shared a hotel room.
Dun, dun, dun.
First of all, let's say that I'm probably not the first person to require a run of antibiotics after sharing a hotel room with Mike Katziff.
Nice, dude.
But second of all, having those two tomcats on the prowl in Austin, I don't think the city has yet recovered.
Ugh. No one was safe. So the first thing we wanted to do now that we have everybody back is just briefly run down a little bit of what happened while you were gone. I don't know, Stephen, if you've heard of this song, Friday.
Okay. There were two. Now, part of it is that in the days leading up to South by Southwest, I was essentially a hermit doing nothing
yes.
but logistics.
Did you say days or weeks?
Months, perhaps. But it's certainly in the several days before, you know, I was just pounding down the last right. batches of music. Two entire gigantic internet memes exploded and got old.
You had your head down.
While I was looking away.
And so let's talk about them.
So now it's a perfect time to beat them further into the ground. But the two memes that I'm referring to, one is the Rebecca Black video mm-hmm. for Friday.
Sure.
And one was going to be the thing that's making me happy this week until it became more controversial and upsetting and it just got weird the way uh-huh. these things generally always do,
uh-huh.
which is the kid in Australia punching another kid in Australia and the yeah. kid in Australia who got punched picking up the other kid and throwing him to the ground in spectacular fashion.
Pile driver. Mm-hmm.
Pile driver style,
yeah.
which to me, I'm not above it. I'm not too cool or too grown up to say that it was incredibly, incredibly satisfying to see a bully get thrown. I guess you never outgrow that.
Well, and in retrospect, we have heard that nobody was seriously hurt.
It would not be awesome. It would not be making me happy if somebody had gotten hurt, even the bully.
There you go. Well, perfect.
So anyway, memes. Rebecca yeah. Black, what of her?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I wrote about this a little bit, and my thoughts are available, but my general sense is I actually kind of like her. You know, mm-hmm. she made this video for one of these kind of tween pop factories where it's like a vanity press your parents pay and they stick you in a video.
For those who haven't heard it, it's basically a sort of heavily auto-tuned kind of tween pop party anthem.
Remarkably bad lyrics.
Remarkably bad lyrics, which she didn't write, as you pointed out.
7 a.m. waking up in the morning, gotta be fresh, gotta go downstairs, gotta have my bowl, gotta have cereal, seeing everything, the time is going, ticking on and on, everybody's rushing, gotta get down to the bus stop, gotta catch my bus, I see my friends, kicking in the front seat. Whipsy, can I take? It's Friday.
it's like a big budget version of a carnival attraction where you can get your face grafted onto Time magazine.
Exactly. Mm. It's kind of like something you would do at King's Island where they would have like a green screen background while you sing a song with a plastic guitar. But she has a pretty good sense of humor about it. I kind of like her. She has kind of taken the attitude that, well, I don't think I'm a great singer, but I don't think I'm a terrible singer. I didn't write the song, so
My two thoughts on Rebecca Black before we move on. One is the hilarious comment left on your story on the blog. I'm not sure if you would have seen it because it was just today, which was something along the lines of, I don't understand how something this bad could wind up on YouTube. And I just think, yes, the stringent quality standards. Yes.
Something got by.
How did it get by standards and practices?
Something got by the YouTube committee.
The other thing that got me about it was the general tenor of a lot of the comments was sort of, this is the downfall of everything. Now, watching this video, I only just saw it for the first time today, so it's very fresh in my mind. There are no villains in the making of that video, really. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much this pop factory charges. Maybe they're exploiting delusional kids and their parents. Maybe the parents shouldn't have dropped the amount of money, or blah, 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 whatever. But the fact of the matter is, the kid probably wanted it as an heirloom, thought it would be fun. When I was a delusional 13-year-old, I mean, I certainly, just as you were, Linda, I went to one of those attractions and recorded a sort of karaoke-style version of myself singing, Randy Travis is forever and ever, amen. And, to be fair,
that needs to be surfaced.
To be fair, I was like 25 at the time.
You were young, you were in love.
with forever and ever, amen. Yeah. But not everything is the end of civilization as we know it. The kid didn't do anything wrong. The song is bad. Nobody's being exploited here, really.
Right. And honestly, if you didn't want to pay any attention to it, you didn't have to. It wasn't the next major release that had some kind of gigantic promotional campaign. The only reason it got attention is that people were having fun sitting around talking about how bad it was. So honestly, if you think it's that bad, you can always ignore it and move on.
But it was just fascinating to sort of have people like, this is a emblematic of a shallow culture. And like, yes, you know, back in my day, there was never bad music. I always love that. You know, back in the 50s, nothing sucked.
Yeah, made privately by young people. I've never made private amateur bad music before. Anyway, speaking of ignoring it and moving on, the other thing that happened today, which you didn't miss.
But today being Wednesday,
today
March
being
23rd.
Wednesday, March 23rd as we tape. This is that Liz Taylor died this morning. And we wanted to make just a quick trip around the table to remember. We thought maybe we would choose from the as I think Glenn put it, the Liz Taylor deep cuts. Not necessarily the most famous performances, Butterfield 8 and Cat on a Hot Tin Roof and so forth, but perhaps some of the lesser known Liz Taylor appearances. Glenn, why don't you kick us off?
Sure. Well, this isn't exactly lesser known, but you know, Liz Taylor spent much of her career and her life what I would call gay adjacent. And never was she more so than in the 1959 film Suddenly Last Summer.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
This film has everything you want in cinema. It's got lobotomies. It's got truth serum. It's got an insane asylum. It's got mental patients. It's, speaking of insane, it's got Katharine Hepburn doing a crazy southern gothic melodramatic accent dripping with, what would you call it, Trey? Help me out here. You're the
Moonlight.
Guy.
Magnolias.
All right. I was going to say okra slime, but yours was. It's got a script written by Tennessee Williams based on his one-act play that he was helped with by Gore Vidal. So you know it's going to be a paragon of restraint and understatement. So this thing is just crazy. You know, we saw The Adjustment Bureau, you and I, Linda, and, you know, the ending was kind of lacking. Mm-hmm. And if you thought to yourself, as I did, what this film needs is a death by a ravenous pack of Spanish cannibalistic youths.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This is the film for
that
you.
Is uncanny.
Yeah, exactly. Liz Taylor in this film plays a woman who is, you know, on board for a lobotomy. She's on deck for a lobotomy. And so she's having to spend a lot of time looking wounded and pained. And at one point she stubs out a cigarette in her palm to show how sane she is. And, you know, at the end of this film, she is given a line that she could have gone a bunch of different ways with. Mm-hmm. The line is, "It looked as if they had devoured him." Now, there's a lot of different ways you can go with a line like that. To her eternal credit, Liz chose the biggest. Yes. The biggest possible reading you can give that line.
Sure.
So
if
you,
is pretty big.
If you want to see her, you know, Monty Clift is in this film. It's just, this film is quintessential ridiculousness, and it's a lot of fun.
Excellent. Very, very good. Trey Graham.
I don't have anything nearly as colorful as that, but I am fond of Liz Taylor's appearance, Elizabeth Taylor, because apparently she didn't like Liz very much. Mm. I am fond of Elizabeth Taylor's appearance on that paragon of taste and subtlety, The Nanny, in which they get jokes.
Did you need me to sing the theme song?
Yes, please.
No, I didn't think so.
Actually, this is the episode in which Fran quotes the theme song while sitting in the bubble bath with what's his name, the boss.
Yeah, Mr. Sheffield.
Yes, Mr. Sheffield.
Not that Linda remembers.
While she is in a state of amnesia, right?
Oh, I see.
So actually, come to think of it, this is almost as complicated as Suddenly Last Summer.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyway, in this episode, Elizabeth Taylor plays herself. She has come to visit Mr. Sheffield for some reason. They're doing some kind of benefit or something. And
he was a theater producer.
He was a theatrical producer, it's true. But for whatever reason, Elizabeth Taylor believes that it is a good idea to ask Fran to arrange for a courier to carry her very expensive strand of pearls across town to the photo shoot that she's about to do. Fran, of course, decides that the courier can't be trusted, and she needs to deliver them herself, and of course she loses them. Anyway, in this very brief scene, Taylor's not in it for very long, in this brief scene, they get jokes out of not just the multiple marriages and the gaudy, gaudy jewelry.
Are you Maxwell's wife?
Oh, no. I just work for him. Actually, I've never been married.
Not even once?
But also out of her effect on everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Fran and her ticky-tacky mother both lose all their composure
right.
in Elizabeth Taylor's presence.
What are you doing here? The boy let me in. I've got to meet Elizabeth Taylor.
Excuse me.
Over my dead body.
If I could meet Elizabeth Taylor, I could retire in Florida tomorrow.
Miss Taylor, I'd like you to meet my mother.
But so do the fancy pants butler.
How do you do, Tiss Mailer? I'm Biles the Nutler. That's not right, is it?
And so does the uppity sidekick, mm-hmm, the mm-hmm. woman that...
Cece,
yes, that Mr. Sheffield...
You can all laugh if you want.
They all find themselves completely flabbergasted right. when this woman is
Niles,
around,
by the way, is the butler.
Yes, thank you.
Not like I can be like, I am above this.
Was this white-haired era...
No, this is perfume.
Is this White Diamonds era?
This is before that. This is Passion era. In fact, there's a specific reference to Passion. She's going to do a photo shoot for Passion, her new fragrance.
Gotcha.
And there's a big take, and everybody goes, ooh. So it's clearly about product placement.
Gotcha.
But, it's kind of delightful.
Excellent.
Anyway, but if you're asking for a serious deep cut, there's a film called The VIPs, which I have a vague memory of talking about in the last 6 months or so, and it may have been on this podcast. She's a rich lady. Richard Burton is her cruel industrialist husband, and Louis Jourdan is the French guy she's planning to run off with just as soon as Richard Burton's plane takes off from a fog-bound Heathrow. Orson Welles is in this movie. Maggie Smith plays a dang secretary.
There you go. Sounds perfect.
I am just going to get skunked in the gay off. I'm not even close.
Rock on, Stephen Thompson. What do you have for us?
I would win a twee off. You know, I don't have a ton of really vivid cultural memories of Elizabeth Taylor. I think that part of what made me sad as this news broke and as I've sort of thought about her throughout the course of the day is that she always struck me as sort of a genuinely kind soul and sort of a gatherer of lost souls a little bit. As much as people joke about the eight failed marriages is sad. That's her life.
And she had children with some of those people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
they weren't all failed. Remember, one of them died.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, as much as she was sort of a larger than life character and was, as Linda wrote in what I thought, frankly, was a really good remembrance.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, I don't mean to compliment you to your face.
Yeah, yeah.
She was sort of the ultimate celebrity. You know, she was such a gigantic, towering figure in entertainment, and yet at the same time, she did The Nanny. the cultural memory that stands out for me is, as a nerd, is that she was on The Simpsons, and mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. there was all this talk that she was going to be the voice of Maggie Simpson, and they made this they got Elizabeth Taylor, they got the biggest star they could possibly get, and then she says one word, and it was incredibly sweet, and it's the grace note on a lovely episode of that show. But then, you know, like a year later or so, she comes back, and mm-hmm. she's on really my favorite episode of The Simpsons of all time, which is the one in which Krusty gets canceled. Mm-hmm. And they sort of pack it with all these gigantic cameos, and Elizabeth Taylor sort of shows up having not done the Krusty comeback special. And you know, I just always thought, you know, as much as she was an oddball, and as much as she, you know, was a, you always sort of expected her to be, you know, walking Michael Jackson's ocelot or whatever,
Michael Jackson's ocelot, that was a lost soul.
Sort of, you know, whatever sort of crackpot thing would get her in the tabloids, she seemed like in some ways kind of a cool lady.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I can top you for silliness of reference, because mine is that Elizabeth Taylor appeared for a time on General Hospital as Helena Cassadine, mm-hmm. who was tied up in this whole Cassadine. There was the ice princess and this whole, we're going to freeze the world. And it's very complicated.
There was a freeze ray. I remember
there was
this.
There was a freeze thing.
On General Hospital? I thought Days of Our Lives was the craziest.
No.
General Hospital had this evil plot, going to freeze the world, and the Cassadines. And,
right.
And
because, it was an island of death at some point, too?
I think so, yeah. Yeah. And she was married to Mikos Cassadine, who for a long time was their kind of big bad. And she was tied up with Luke Spencer and Robert Scorpio and all these kind of iconic...
Robert Scorpio.
All these kind of iconic... And as a result of the particular character she was playing, she showed up at Luke and Laura's wedding. Now, Luke and Laura's wedding on General Hospital, if you were not around at this time, you would not know this, but was probably the biggest pop culture event
of that year, certainly
of that year. This was at a time when daytime television was much more massively popular and important pop culture wise than it is now. And she showed up at Luke and Laura's wedding, and there was something about kind of the blessing of having Elizabeth Taylor at it that sort of made it the icing on the cake of mm-hmm. this massively promoted, incredibly anticipated pop culture event. And again, just like you said about The Simpsons, she wasn't too good to be on General Hospital, and she came back and she did it another time. And if you look her up on YouTube, if you look up General Hospital and Elizabeth Taylor on YouTube, there is a round of bloopers.
There is a delightful blooper reel.
I have seen General Hospital and the university, and I approve. As my husband would have approved. Mikos Cassadine. I'm sorry. As my husband would have approved, Mikos Cassadine had a deep and abiding love. I said Cassadine.
That's right.
I see a tartar myself. I'm sorry, folks. I'm not used to acting.
You hope that those are not hilarious bloopers based on the fact that she was affected by anything. Mm-hmm. And I don't know exactly what phase of her life that is. So it's always weird with people who have a history. You know, she talked about going to the Betty Ford Clinic and mm-hmm. things like that. You don't want to be laughing at people who are flubbing their lines for some other reason.
For some non-hilarious
reason. But her sense of humor about it and the way she interacted with other people, there is a moment where she's talking to Tony Geary, who played Luke Spencer, and I guess still does.
Oh my God.
Unbelievable. I think it's his frozen head. there's a moment where he sort of goes up on a line and just kind of freezes and looks at her and sort of looks at everybody on the set, and he says, "It's Elizabeth Taylor." It's sort of like, what do you expect me to do? And it's delightful, and I encourage you to look it up and seek it out. So those are a few of our remembrances. Feel free to come to the blog and to Facebook and share yours and what you remember of her. I think she was around so long, from child stardom to just recently making various pop culture impressions, that everybody's got their own. So that's the news of the week. And the next thing we were going to talk about...
Hopefully nothing will happen between now and Friday.
Exactly. Yeah. If it's not the news of the week by the time you hear this, we're sorry. the next topic we were going to move on to is we want to do a quick round of a game we're going to call I'm All Out of Love, which is something that was, I believe, suggested on our Facebook page mm-hmm. and is something that you once really loved and were enthusiastic about that you've sort of fallen out of love with, perhaps a little bit. And Glenn, why don't you start us
off?
Well,
you think of it, it's a variation of How Wrong I Was, actually.
It is. It's a little bit the reverse of How Wrong I Was. Most of those came out as I was negative, and now I'm positive. These are.
But now we decided to give hate a chance.
Yeah. That's right. We decided to give.
So let's start with me. This is another film thing, and it's a very specific film thing, and I'm a little worried about it, but let me just start. Okay. If you had asked me 6 months ago who my favorite director was, I would have said this Canadian filmmaker called Guy Madden.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I fell in love in 1992 with a film he did called Careful, which is, among many other things, a parody of German mountaineering films of the 1920s and 30s.
You know, I've been waiting for someone to do that. I didn't realize that had been done.
Somebody finally taken the starch out of that genre because it's been on the top too long.
Enough.
Right.
Enough already. German mountaineering films.
Take that, Leni Riefenstahl.
Oh, boy.
She actually did several of these blue light kind of...
Like, that's why you remember
her. That's why you remember her. Right.
You know what I hate about Leni?
That's right. So, I fell in love with this film. It is set in a little alpine village, a fictional alpine village, in which to speak above a whisper is to cause an avalanche, so everybody in the town must be quiet, and there can be no music, and the animals have been surgically altered, so they do not make any sounds.
Sure.
Wow.
And it's all about
sounds
this.
Sounds like heaven.
Linda would like to work there.
It is all about sort of sublimated, frustrated sexuality. There are lines in this film that I never quote, and I quote a hell of a lot of films. I never quote it because I want people's first experience with those lines to be seeing this film.
Wow.
I love this film so much.
So it's a secret. You're not going to tell us what
so
it is.
How do you turn a hateful topic
Here
into a recommendation?
Here it comes.
I was going to say.
The film is called Careful. Mm-hmm. It's just so funny. I have never laughed as loud, as long, and as unself-consciously in a theater as I did for this film. And I think this happens a lot. My love for that film colored my impressions, I now realize, of every film that I've seen by this guy afterwards. Because, first of all, you have to love his titles, Saddest Music in the World, Cowards Bend the Knee, Twilight of the Ice Nymphs. He's done a lot of... he's done a lot.
Are you naming superheroes?
I am not. He's done a lot of shorts. He's actually done a hell of a lot of shorts, and they have fantastic names like Sissy Boy Slap Party, which is the name of my Morrissey cover band. Flesh Pots of Antiquity. Nude Caboose. Now, none of these are smutty. They're just very highly... But what happens is, when a film resonates with you in a specific way, so much that you love it, that you feel like this film was made for you, the echo of that carries into everything that you see. Okay. So
you mean like Far and Away and the subsequent over of Tom Cruise?
Yes, exactly like that, Trey. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
I hear everything in that accent.
But I now have gone back to a lot of these films, and the bloom is off the rose. Now I can see how mannered and how precious and how insular they are. And that is something I love in the film Careful. It's something that ceases to enthrall me in the other films that this guy has made. I'll go to my grave loving Careful, but I'll wait and see his next films coming out. I forget the title. Pretty soon, it's in production now. It kind of hurt me a little bit to realize I don't love this guy as much as I did even half a year ago.
Now it's depressing. Good job.
Good. My work is done.
Now it feels dark, so thank you, Glenn Weldon. Stephen Thompson.
Okay, I actually may have slightly misjudged the concept. I had thought of things that started out enjoyable and then got so unenjoyable that I no longer enjoyed...
It's a perfectly acceptable variant
on the theme.
Okay. Well,
wrong, but...
Just so that all this talk of when we talk about not being above General Hospital and all that, my primary choice is Designing Women. A show that I started out enjoying to a fairly enormous and unseemly degree.
Really?
I did.
Okay. Well, come now. Early seasons.
I've never.
If you come out anti-Sugar Baker, Glenn Weldon, we will not be friends.
You're
Linda,
fired.
Linda and Glenn will have words.
Let the record fired. Show I am zipping my lip and throwing away the key, although that doesn't really work, does
Thank
it?
You, buddy.
Yeah. Now, part of it is, I was still in high school when that show started out. I watched it with my parents. They enjoyed it a great deal. Mm-hmm. That show went completely wackadoo near the end. And I have this vague memory of Meshach Taylor being strapped to a big wheel for some reason and it being so obnoxiously over the top that I then suddenly hit a and retroactively couldn't enjoy the show anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Was not ever able to go back and enjoy the shows in the past. And another show, I'd say this about, but to a lesser degree, a show I liked less but tended to watch, is Dharma and Greg.
Oh, yeah.
Dharma and Greg
a cute show.
Was a cute show. Hit a point.
Yes, it did.
Where it's Jenna Elfman and Laurie Metcalf are literally shrieking at each other for 10 minutes. And all, and I think they're doing like karate moves or something.
It went wrong.
But it's just like, you know, and it's just 10 minutes of screaming.
It went wrong.
Instantly, boom, never again. Not only did I stop watching new episodes of the show, but it completely and utterly killed my enjoyment of every episode of the show ever and erased it from my memory as mm-hmm. if zapped with the thing in Men in Black. It's a reason to quit while you're ahead mm-hmm. with some of these shows. You can get mediocre. Like, I feel like The Office has gotten kind of mediocre. Mm-hmm. But if The Office were to get terrible, mm-hmm. it would pain me
right.
to know that I wouldn't be able to enjoy those right. first seasons that I love so much nearly as much.
I hear ya.
This is one of the advantages of the British system of making television, right? They,
right.
they order, you know, short seasons and they know when enough is enough
yeah,
sometimes.
I think that's true. Well, mine is a movie that I saw in my slightly younger days. Reality Bites is the movie that we're going to talk about. And let me tell you why.
That's
let
a really me, interesting.
Let me tell you why. I knew that guy.
Which
I knew
guy?
That guy.
The Ethan Hawke guy?
Ethan Hawke guy. Okay. I knew that specific exact guy. And you know what line it is? There is a part where he is sitting there and he is needling her and and she says something like, "Why are you acting like this?" And he says, "I am not acting like anything. I am calmly reading." And the minute he said that, I wanted to jump through the screen, punch him in the face, just beat him with my shoe. And I was sort of friends with that guy, and it was this long, endless thing, and it went on for years, and everything that guy does, I was like, so of course, if you still live inside the fantasy of that guy, right, the ending of that movie is incredibly satisfying, because he comes to see her on the lawn of her apartment. She runs downstairs and he's on the lawn and he says,
"My dad died."
"Oh God, Troy, I'm sorry."
"No, it's...
I'm so sorry."
"No, it... What happened was that, I kind of got this arcane glimpse at the universe. And the best thing that I can say about that is, I don't know, I have this planet of regret sitting on my shoulders. And you have no idea how much I wish that I could go back to that morning after we made love and do everything different."
"I have a planet of regret on my shoulders."
Oh, yeah.
And it all turns out to be, "I've come to my senses. I understand why I've been so wrong. I am now in touch with my feelings. I'm going to stop being like this." And they wind up making out, and he's actually playing the acoustic guitar. And that's how that movie ends.
Wow. Ew. While they make out?
It's complicated. He's singing Froggy Went A-Courting. It's very cool. Anyway.
Oh, my God.
It's supposed to be a nice romantic ending. Mm-hmm. Anyway, when I first saw that movie, I still kind of believed that that was a nice, sweet, romantic fantasy. Later, as I watched it when I got older, I thought, oh, my God, people suffer for years because they believe that that guy is eventually going to come to your house and say, "I have a planet of regret on my shoulder." That's not what's going to happen. He's just going to keep doing exactly the same thing until the day you die. So, at that point, the movie lost some of its charm for me. And
some
that
of its charm.
Is my and that's my story. Trey Graham.
Gays, non-gays, puppies, mom, and apple pie.
What?
Wait, what now?
These are all...
That's not even a Mike Katz of slow clap.
No.
That's a regular clap.
He was very
clap.
Excited, so he clapped it.
Okay, so give this to these are things that you...
Gays, non-gays.
Things that I used to appreciate. And
now hate. So this includes gays, non-gays,
puppies, mom, And apple pie.
Mom?
Wow.
I've never... No, you
not
can't...
my mom. Can't. Just the concept of mom.
The concept of...
No, I'm sorry.
Are
I got nothing.
About my
I got
mom?
No. I got nothing for this segment, so I just came up...
You leave my mom out of this. My mom's awesome.
I got nothing for this segment, so I got lame jokes.
That's okay.
That's right. Puppy hater.
That's okay.
I would like to write in to protest Trey's hatred of apple pie.
Yeah. That's right. Trey is just trying to attract all the good mail this week. puppy defenders and people who like your mothers.
That's right. To me!
direct your email. Trey does not like his mom at. Anyway, so obviously if you have something that you once loved and now no longer appreciate, or if you would like to argue that eventually that guy is going to show up with a planet of regret on his shoulders, you can visit us on Facebook or you can come to the blog at Monkey C and submit your submissions.
How do you submissions? How do you find us on Facebook? Because I, for one, have been measuring my worth
right.
by the number of Facebook followers we have.
Absolutely, you can find us on Facebook by searching for Pop Culture Happy Hour, and we have several thousand folks who hang around there and talk about librarians and books and recommendations, and they talk about all kinds of fantastically fabulous
they are smarter and better certainly than I am.
Yeah, we're currently having a big discussion about the overlap between Pop Culture Happy Hour fans and librarians, led by Margaret, our super fan, our A1 super fan, not related to any of us. So hey, lady, if you're out there, so visit us Facebook on the blog, come see us, talk to us, and that, as you can imagine, brings us to our favorite part of the show, my favorite part of the show. What is making us happy this week? Stephen Thompson.
All right. Well, originally, as I said, what was making me happy was watching that kid throw that other kid, which is horrible. That's a horrible thing to admit, especially when, I have to admit, my children are in the room.
Yeah.
Both of my children, Jonah and Grace, are sitting in chairs in the room, waving. And I've already explained to them, I said, oh, kids, you got to see this YouTube video where this kid is
Grace has already picked up Jonah and thrown him on the floor. Emulating this move.
And obviously...
The Undertaker.
Obviously, the kid, especially particularly the kid who gets thrown, could have been very badly hurt. It is
yeah,
not...
It looks in this video like his ankle is about to be snapped or something. It's terrible.
We do not condone, endorse,
or in other ways suggest that people should throw other people as a way to stop bullying. However, it does... Mike just gave the 50-50 hand gesture. It really did, though, enormously make me happy to have, you know, another round of discussion of stopping this sort of crap.
Bullying.
I think that's very fair.
Because I think it's probably safe to say that everyone in this room, probably except Grace, has been at some point or another viciously bullied. And to see that so roundly...
She's the one who bullies Jonah.
To see that so roundly discouraged, it reminded me, actually, and, you know, don't let your eyes glaze over too much. There's a famous moment after a football game about a year and a half ago where a player on one team taunts, like waggles his hand in the face of the player from another team. This is a major college
The hand waggler was the winning team.
Right. It was Boise State.
So
Boise State beat Oregon, and the Boise State player is waggling his hand in the face of the Oregon player, to which the Oregon player responds by cold cocking the guy, just quaff, and just dropping it.
Again, no one was hurt.
No one was hurt. In the aftermath of this guy punching this other guy, and of course it's the punch that launched 1,000 internet avatars and discussions of sportsmanship and blah 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 and what's appropriate, and you know, there are gray areas. The guy continued to rampage in a very inappropriate way. But at the time, I remember thinking that it was the sort of situation where punishment was meted out in the exact appropriate way. The guy who punched the guy got suspended and in trouble and his reputation was harmed, and the guy who waggled his hand in his face got to get punched in the face for the benefit of like 20 million YouTube viewers, and that is sometimes the appropriate response for acting like a jerk.
Uh-huh.
I had sort of the same reaction a little bit to this, and obviously in the aftermath there's all this he said, she said discussion that's less enjoyable, but to have as a country a discussion of, hey, you know what, if you pick on somebody, this might happen to you, I think is an enormously satisfying thing.
And even if you see it as a sad thing, even if it's not what's making you happy, then the answer to it is, this is a sad thing that happens because nobody else is doing anything to stop this from happening, and this kid feels like he's at the end of his rope or whatever.
Yeah, so. And the other sad thing about that video is I never hear anything about the kid who's bigger than the big kid who clearly comes up and pushes the kid around after he throws the kid.
Yeah.
And just the fact that a light has been shown on that, it's bittersweet, but it's what's making me happy this week, in addition to, obviously, to South by Southwest, which was a blast.
Very good, very good. Trey Graham, what's making you happy this week?
Well, earlier this week, on Tuesday specifically, I think it was the birthday of three gentlemen we may or may not have talked about on this podcast. Stephen Sondheim, Andrew Lloyd Webber, and William Shatner.
Wow.
And as somebody said on Twitter, we still don't have a damn Star Trek musical. Happy birthday to them all anyway. Uh-huh. But the main thing that's making me happy this week is the news that Netflix is, for its very first venture into original programming, it's going to make a show and stream it to Netflix users itself. It's remaking House of Cards, which is a BBC serial that made Ian Richardson kind of famous in the U.S. It's a David Fincher project, and if I've got it right, it was something that they were developing for HBO or sort of had on the boards for HBO. They sort of imagined that it would show up there eventually, and Netflix swooped in and picked it up and outbid HBO.
Striking
fear into the hearts of studios and distributors and the entire world of, you know, Hollywood.
Yeah,
basically.
Absolutely.
It's a delicious sort of political soap opera. And apparently it's popular enough on Netflix streaming that they've hired Kevin Spacey to star in a remake that'll be set in the world of U.S. politics as opposed to in a post-Thatcher Britain. This is the thing that gave us the phrase, or gave a certain subset of us the phrase, "You might very well say that. I couldn't possibly comment." Which we deploy at meaningful points in conversation with our dearest, dearest friends. So that is making me very happy, because if we get, you know, if we get Kevin Spacey in his subtle Kaiser Soze mode, this could be great, great fun. Mm-hmm. If we get Kevin Spacey in K-Pax mode, all bets are off. Bets are off.
I was thinking pay it forward, but K-Pax is so much better.
It's possible to lump those together in a big, bad lump.
Very good. I'm on board with that one. Glenn Weldon, what's making you happy this week?
Anybody who listens to a podcast is likely familiar with the man, the myth, the legend of Carl Pilkington. He was the producer on Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant's radio show, and then he became, I guess, a character, I guess you would call it, host of their podcast. And the podcast consisted of them questioning Carl Pilkington about his view of the world. And his view of the world is a deeply provincial one, where there is the way the English do it, which is the normal way, and there is the way the rest of the world does it, which is weird, or in his words, mental.
Yes.
So naturally, what they've done is put together an 8-episode miniseries called An Idiot Abroad, which is on the Science Channel. I think it's almost run its course now, but I think you can still get it on demand. And the context of the show is just basically sending Carl Pilkington by himself with a film crew to the Seven Wonders of the World, where this deeply incurious man confronts other cultures. And Gervais introduces the show every week by saying, "The funniest thing in the world to me is Carl Pilkington in a corner being poked with a stick. I am that stick. This show is that stick." And it sounds kind of mean. And I was surprised to find myself agreeing with Ricky Gervais watching the show, because I have never found Carl Pilkington as funny as Ricky Gervais seems to find him. I think few people do. But the amazing thing, the perfect setup of the show, the sort of pressure and release of the show is Carl Pilkington is incapable of awe, even at the most awesome spectacles. Mm-hmm. And he goes to these places and whines and complains.
What is that?
I think it's chicken's feet. Yeah.
You don't pick a food by what sort of feet it's got. Just have chicken if he wants chicken. We're paying. He could have had anything he wanted. And he's spitting it out now. He's just spitting his nails out by the looks of things. No, thanks. You're all right. I wouldn't mind it. He's been munching, like, Mintos in the van. He's never offered me one of them. It gets the chicken feet. Suddenly he's keen for me to have one. He's just spitting stuff out. He's chewing on it. He's spitting on it. I can't eat this. See that, then? It's his van. He'll have to clean it up. You're not having pudding, are you?
And if that was the show, it would be unbearable. But Gervais has a point. If you match that with him getting stung by bees or being massaged by this woman in China who takes her hands, puts her hands in gloves, holds them over a open flame, and then proceeds to put her hands on his person, while he reacts in a very English way, which is kind of demanding to know why this is being done to him. Explain to me why this is being done. Who is this person? Why is she doing it to me? All in a very sort of, as I say, provincial, incurious way. It's very, very funny.
Excellent.
I've never seen this show, but one of the things I remember from the podcast, I think is one of the high points of Carl Pilkington idiocy is some long conversation about evolution and monkeys.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Monkey news.
Okay. So one of the questions that I never quite settled to my own satisfaction was whether this is really Carl Pilkington, whether he is... could possibly be this clueless and illogical and ill-educated, or whether it's some kind of character that they've worked out together and sustained in what I would have to admit is an admirable fashion.
It's a question that they address in the show admirably. In the last episode, he kind of comes back and they say, "What have you learned?" And the answer, of course, is nothing. I will say that there are times when they let him go off and do a bit and just sort of riff. And that's not the funny part. The funny part is not him talking. The funny part is him having things done to him, having unpleasant things done to him, and his reaction of just trying to puzzle out the logic of the situation in situations which, are devoid of logic. So, I mean, it's a valid question, and it's a question that's always going to get asked about this guy. But I don't think you will ask that question after you see the show.
Mm. Very good.
I am coming to the end of my rope on DC Universe Online. Professor Zapp has gotten to level 30, which is the highest you can achieve before they...
Make him talk to other people.
No, well, technically, yeah, because all the bosses now are really tough and they keep killing me. So I'm kind of running out of steam. I did invent a guy who shoots sonic bursts from his fists. His name, of course, is Jazz Hands. There was a criminal from the future. His name is Tempest Fugitive. See what I did there?
Yeah.
And there is an evil mob enforcer with the power to cloud men's minds. I'm going to let you guys figure that out. You can figure it out if you just think about it for a second. Evil mob enforcer, cloud men's minds. Forget about it.
Oh, God.
You can see I'm running out of steam.
Yeah, aren't we all? Mm. Well, what is making me happy this week is... very, very simple and straightforward. And what is making me happy this week is that Dancing with the Stars has returned to television. And as much as I hate myself, I am always I am always really happy when it comes back, because I just want to see a little bit of substandard cha-cha is so important to my being. And this, in the premiere, we got to see Ralph Macchio, the Karate Kid.
Oh, looking pretty Macchio, right? Just as Macchio as ever.
He doesn't age.
Isn't he like 52 on 20?
He's like 52. He never changes. He doesn't age. And Kirstie Alley doing a surprisingly adequate cha-cha. Mm-hmm. And, it's one of those shows I'm always just happy to see it come back. And as much as, like I said, as much as I regret it, I sit there and I think, well, at least it's not The Bachelor.
Which is the alternative.
Which is the time slot that it mm-hmm. has. It trades off with The Bachelor. So when Dancing with the Stars comes back, it's like,
But this time, the Dancing with the Stars slot is going to be filled by season 2 of The Bachelor Pad.
That's right. Once again, later, we will have undoubtedly some Bachelor Pad.
Who else do we have on this train wreck besides Macho?
Sugar Ray Leonard.
We got Sugar Ray Leonard.
Is there a Kate Gosselin?
Petra Nemkova, who is a supermodel.
Is there a Kate Gosselin equivalent that I would really enjoy watching?
Do you know who Wendy Williams is?
Sure.
Wendy Williams is on it, and she is not very good, mostly because she is not confident. And one thing that I did think was very interesting without going down the rabbit hole of attempting to discuss Dancing with the Stars and the seriousness, but it is interesting that Kirstie Alley and Wendy Williams are both certainly bigger women than the little willowy professional dancers and the supermodels, and they're both a little bit older, and it's amazing to watch how uncomfortable Wendy Williams is and how comfortable Kirstie Alley is.
Interesting.
And how differently that makes them come across. That Wendy Williams, despite the fact that she has this big, loud personality on her show,
I would expect her to be like a Niecy Nash, who's enormously charming.
I literally said to my TV as Wendy Williams was dancing, she needs a little more Niecy Nash.
Everybody needs a little more Niecy Nash.
Whereas Kirstie Alley has plenty of Niecy Nash. Yeah. Kirstie Alley has the Niecy Nash. And so they have similar reasons to be uncomfortable, but Wendy Williams is incredibly timid and scared, and Kirstie Alley has basically reached the hell with it stage.
Good for Kirstie.
And she's out there doing it, and she did fine.
Now, what about Sugar Ray Leonard? You would expect that guy to be light on his feet if, you know, perhaps unfortunately prone to inflicting damage.
He was not very good. He was not as bad as the guy who is now the Adam Carolla replacement on Loveline. Because that guy cannot dance at all.
Who's the
dance his way off of a paper bag.
Well, I was just about to make this point. Like, who's the Buzz Aldrin who is actually incapable of lifting his feet?
One of the things that's interesting is that it's not former Little Romeo, now Romeo, who is the son of Master
legendarily
P,
bad,
legendary non-dancer Master P, who got the lowest scores in the history of Dancing with the Stars. Romeo is actually doing okay. So he said to redeem the family name. So there you go. So what is making me happy is having Dancing with the Stars back. It does make me happy, even though I am ashamed of myself. And that brings us to the end of another Pop Culture Happy Hour. Thanks to all of you for being here. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me and the blog at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Glenn at G.H. Weldon. That's Weldon. You can follow Trey at Trey Graham. That's Trey and Graham. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen. That's Stephen. You can follow our esteemed producer, Mike Katziff, who puts up with us every week so valiantly. And Mike Katziff, that's Katziff. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music. And a special thanks this week to Stephen's children, Jonah and Grace, for valiantly tolerating this entire taping with a minimum of misery broadcast on their faces.
Grace is sitting on my knee right now tolerating this.
And so thanks to all of you guys.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for being here, and we will see you next week.